there, you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where we shine the light on partnerships and programs that can serve our beautiful natural resources in Marion County. We are illuminating our Marion SWCD mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences. And I'm your host, Jenny Ammon, Natural Resource Educator with Marion SWCD. On this episode, we get to talk with Amanda Stevens, owner and organic farmer at Nottinghamshire Farms in St. Paul, Oregon. We get to chat about her path into farming and specifically organic farming and how their family is implementing conservation projects on the land with the help of Marion SWCD and what farming into the future looks like for them. So we're extremely excited to have you on the program and chat with you and learn from you. So welcome, Amanda.
Thank you.
We are really excited because we got to partner with you. And I'd love for you to just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to meet SWCD and our tech staff.
Most recently, I became introduced to you guys by looking up for your cover crop grants and things like that. After I graduated from university, I actually worked for the Washington County Soil and Water Conservation District for a very small bit in between my travels. And so I was always kind of aware of these kind of programs that were out there and how much they can help farmers. So I am originally from St. Paul, Oregon. My family has been farming there for generations. And in about 2013, my husband, Anthony, and I came from England and we took over management of my family farm. We managed the farm for 5 years, included about doing 130 acres, which at the time mixed organic and transitional. And then I also managed 6 other tenants that rented farmland and other buildings and such on the farm. So it was a bit diverse. And then in the fall of 2018, my family farm decided that they weren't going to farm anymore. And so my husband and I decided to start our own business, Nottinghamshire Farms. And we rented 130 acres from my family farm, plus a building, and just kind of took our operation that we had started with my family farm and then expanded it over the last 3 years for Nottinghamshire. So we started out farming strawberries, corn, and fresh market zucchini, peas, and then we added cannery squash. So we currently grow, this year we've really expanded. This year we grow 6 acres of strawberries, all fresh market, between 40 and 45 acres of fresh market sweet corn. Our crops like our zucchini, our peas, and our cucumbers are all done in rows because it's fresh market. So it's very, you don't sell by the acre. You hope you sell it. No contracts in fresh market. It usually comes around to about a little half acre of each. And we also, for the first time this year, we decided to grow some pumpkins and some winter squash. And then for us, we decided to do what we called happy crops, just something both my husband and I wanted to try, but knew we probably weren't going to make any money off of it. And bless Anthony, he is usually up for anything as long as it's not what he calls faffy, where he has to, fiddle about with little things. So I found some sunflowers that he could put in our planter and just drive the tractor down. So I got a gigantic, which turns out to be a gigantic, way too many sunflowers. And then he planted some giant pumpkins.
Oh, how exciting. Now I see why you call them happy crops. First of all, sunflowers are hard to look at and not be just ecstatic.
Yes, they were beautiful. It was really fun to watch them grow, especially with my kids. They got to a point where we could play hide and seek. And then all of a sudden one day it got to a point where it was like Jumanji. It was insane. So we actually are going to try and grow them again next year, but we're going to grow them smarter.
I love that. So one of the things I keep learning from guests on this podcast is that The lessons learned in doing are far greater than reading. I get caught in the books and then I go out to the garden. I'm like, yeah, I might got this all planned out with my square foot gardening. And I'm like, wow, that totally backfired. That was awful. Next year, write it down and don't do that again.
Yes. No, we both have what Anthony calls his diary. And because I switch between American terms and British terms, I lose language, which is a bit embarrassing. You're at like your calendar and he writes down little things like, let's not plant so many sunflowers so close together, like skip rows and do a third of the amount.
Yes. So I have to ask about the giant pumpkins too. So what happens? How do you use a giant pumpkin beyond decoration?
Well, what was left over this year went to feed some dairy cows.
Okay.
So they did go to some productive use in the end, and we actually did sell quite a bit. We planted 250 seeds, and I'm pretty sure we got about 70 to 80% germination, which is fantastic. Oh,
wow.
We were not prepared for that. I also did do a lot of reading, but then when it comes down to practical farming, giant pumpkins can be faffy if you want to do them like prize winner. And with all the other crops we have going on, we didn't have the time to go out there and turn them or get them, thinned out in time. And that also became a bit like, luckily they were planted next to the sunflowers. So it was like a corner of Jumanji. It was just crazy out there.
Fantastic.
Also, like the sunflowers, we're going to plant them smarter next year. We're going to plant less. We're going to plant them way further apart.
Oh, what a great, I am a bit of a bird nerd, and the sunflower food plots were so great for, back home in Iowa, we would do dove hunting food plots, but they're so helpful for so many other migratory birds along any major flyway, which we just happen to be on major flyway. So that bolsters several different things, you know?
Yes, they were great pollinators. I actually was able to find a few florists to take some and then sell some through we have a little farm store at our place. But mostly they went to the bees and the birds and the deer.
And if folks are listening, one of the things I would love you to do, Amanda and her family have this NottinghamshireFarms.com wonderful website. It's beautiful. The pictures are great. I do have to ask you mentioned your kids and Jumanji, which I honestly want to come and run through those next year. But can you tell us a little bit more about your family? How old are your kiddos?
My son just turned 6 and my daughter will be 4 in January. They are having a blast at the farm. It's really special to watch them out there and watch them get into things. Yeah, it's lovely to see that and to have that experience that I had for my children. They get into what are we going to grow? My daughter was ready to pick out her pumpkin in September, which actually backfired because we ended up selling all our pumpkins, like all of them down to the last two. And I realized I didn't save any for my own children.
Did they let you forget about that or not?
I just didn't tell them. I just need to borrow 2 pumpkins that you're never going to sell anyways.
It's so important. I think that your comment about having the experiences that you had, there's a big removal of most people from nature and their heads are down in technology. And I think that having a connection to the broader, larger system just makes better humans. It's all reciprocal.
Yes, that is a big deal to us. Like we both have experienced some succession planning's gone wrong in our families, and we do not want to force our children to farm. If they want to farm, they are more than welcome to farm. We also will never force them to farm together. If they want to farm, we will separate the business. Like we will not treat them equally just because we know that that is not going to work out in the end.
I love it. That is very, very smart. I think that is a wonderful mom and dad move. Well, I have to follow up with some of the farming talk. Mark Akimoff, who's our egg conservation planner, spoke so highly of you and your husband. And I wanted to just check in a little bit with you about the process of becoming certified organic and kind of have you paint a picture for our listeners of that decision that you made and the whole process, which I know is a huge question. So as best as you can, kind of cover those topics.
Okay. Well, when we came back in 2013, part of the farm that we were handed was already certified. So we just kind of fell into it. Both of us grew up conventionally farming. Okay. For the first 2 years, we did transitional, conventional, and organic, and realized just how complicated that made the organic side. And so we, for Nottinghamshire, we're 100% organic, and a good portion of that is, it's paperwork. There's just no way around that. There's a lot of paperwork. And I've got binders of documents and just keeping track of where your inputs come from. And once you really get going, it's not bad. I'd say having done a mix operation and now a full operation, it's definitely easier to do full. And if you can, I'd recommend that. The process to become certified, we started out with Oregon Tilth back in 2013. And in just this last year in 2021, I think the year we're at, I switched certifiers to the Oregon Department of Agriculture for multiple reasons. And I've so far this year really enjoyed working with ODA. They're able to combine not only my organic certification process, but we're also GAP certified, which is good agricultural practices. And so we're able to combine some of those fees and those inspection times all into one day.
So nice. You could be spending so much time with visits getting all that documented.
Yes. And a lot of it is the same paperwork. Some of it, though, it's quite funny. It actually is a contradictory of terms. Like GAP wants you to keep everything clean, get the birds out of there, and da-da-da. And the organic wants you to encourage wildlife. So it's, you gotta wonder what the guys back in Washington DC do at their desk and if they've ever actually been on a farm.
Open invitation, Amanda, right? Come on out. Come on.
Yes, it is. That's agriculture education should be for everyone. But, it's, once we've gotten going, like I said, it's just kind of a habit. You watch where you document, you've got filing systems like everyone else. I'm extremely blessed that my husband is very organized and a little OCD about it. He's kind of trained me. He does all the bookwork. So he's my bookkeeper. He's not a full accountant, but he does a lot of that stuff, and keeps me in line, helps me stay organized because I'm a bit of a scatterbrain, I think. So.
We got to have the creative kind and we need to have a little OCD. I think that's a good partnership.
Yes, it keeps us going. And it comes, just even the people we work with, our supervisors, they know where all the documents are. So if we get a surprise inspection or the drop in, they know kind of the procedures and everyone's just kind of in the habit of it. But I think the biggest part is your inputs. The difference between organic and conventional, you've got your inputs and just your way of thinking. So instead of getting the sprayer out to deal with the weeds, we get the disc out or the hose out. And okay. Especially in the last decade, the cost of labor is just really put a pressure on us. So makes us really wish there was an organic herbicide that worked.
Yeah, we've heard that echo throughout this year between restoration projects and on the farm that labor is very difficult and very, very expensive. So that is something that our listeners might already know. But I just want to take a quick break and interrupt you for a second and let folks know you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, which is a regular segment of the Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM and streaming on KMUZ.org. And so I want to pick up where we left off talking about kind of the labor. This summer was rough, the drought, and then I don't want to relive it, but I'm going to relive it. The ice storm, fires and the smoke and all the things. And you mentioned what year it was, and I sometimes forget or try to block out most of the last couple of years. But I don't think that's healthy. So we really are like 2021 and the future of farming, especially for you, what are some of the things that you're looking forward to and knowing we have some realization of accepting dry weather and some other climate issues. What is the future going to look like for you?
Well, one of the most exciting things I found this summer was this laser robotic weeder. And our squash cannery stall bush was supposed to do a demo of it that fell through. And so I followed up with the manufacturer and my heart sunk when it cost $1.2 million.
Oh.
Yeah. So we need to find some contractor to be able to buy it to go out to what they call us little guys, because 130 acres of organic fruits and vegetables is actually considered a medium-sized farm. Something like that, it does excite me, because I have a feeling that within the next, hopefully, decade and a half, that will be attainable. For 2021, we actually weren't able to hoe some of our large cannery crops this year because we couldn't get the labor. As awful as some people said 2020 was, that actually was a really good year for us. We were able to get the labor. It was, for some reason, things were opened up. Prices finally hit where they needed to be. People were paying what we needed to pay our labor, and it just, everything seemed to flow for 2020. Mm. 2021 hit, and it just, everything blocked up. We couldn't get the labor through. Our prices actually went down. So the prices that sell things at went down in 2021. The cost of everything went up. I think inflation this year was about 6%. So it's been a tough year. Like the smoke from 2020, it was bad. It cut off a lot of our crops probably about 2 weeks early. But to tell you the truth, it was that heat dome this year we lost. We lost a whole planting of corn. We lost peas, and we are not by far the worst. I mean, I know Caneberry guys lost way more than we did. We got through relatively well with that massive heat dome. And when it comes to the drought, I watched our irrigation pond dry up 2 weeks earlier than it had the year before.
Wow.
And that was heartbreaking. Like, 'cause that means we have to start. We share irrigation with two other farmers. And so we start working at night and just trying to make the water stretch a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. And I wish people actually were more aware of it, because I don't think they are. In a town next to us, they were watering the street one day to clean it. And I called the city and they're like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. We get our water from the ground.
Nope.
And I tried not to lose my top at the lady over the phone, but it was, when it's 117 degrees out, it's hard to keep it together.
I agree. I have a lot of tolerance. I do, as a mom, as a wife, as a government worker, lots of tolerance. But at some point, we have to just look around and be realistic that we had wells run dry in Polk County. In August, we had, and that's real. That's happening. That's also groundwater. So Absolutely. I think sometimes it's okay to lose your top, Amanda. I'm not encouraging everyone to do that, but just sometimes.
Yes. So I think that's like my hope. I always think like it would just be, I went through agriculture education by choice because I grew up farming. I like it. It is where I want to be. I actually went to school originally. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, a water rights lawyer, and discovered I did not like working in the office. And so I went back to farming, and I'm so happy and got a good majority, I think, of my education through experience that I think will always continue. Every year we learn something. And I wish that more people would just open their eyes to what's around them, the reality of when it's this hot and dry, that means you shouldn't be washing your car. And I think we need to do a better job of trying to connect people who aren't connected to farming or agriculture to that natural resources like water connects us all.
I do think that we have, as an agricultural county, we produce a ton of diversity, and your farm is the perfect example of what that looks like. And so when we go to the store and we use our consumer buying power, which it is power, and we are taking from the land, we are part of the the cycle and forgetting where this all comes from, which is the soil and the water and the sun, we separate ourselves. And it would be really, really amazing. I think in the schools, you know, we have PE and we have art and music. I think it would be great to introduce at the younger and middle school level farming. Egg in the classroom is really important, but for future leaders and folks who understand, even like we joked about, we should have some folks in Washington come out. If they would have had a very basic introduction, maybe it wouldn't be necessary.
Yeah, so basic introduction of agriculture, forestry, natural resources, because they're all connected. And I mean, I've had a neighbor, a friend of mine who lives in town, just be, she just never knew about things like, oh, you could run out of water in Oregon. Yes, you can. That wasn't part of her mindset that that was even possible. And I think just little things somehow waken people up. In England, when there's a drought on, they have a hose pipe ban, which means people aren't allowed to water their lawns or wash their cars or things like that. And I think something like that, and I think they have it here in the United States too. I've heard other places, especially in the South, do things like that. Just it intimately connects people who maybe weren't aware of the drought, going, oh, there is a drought because I can't water my lawn.
I think you are a wise, wise woman. Lots of great conversation today. And I want to give you a chance. I did mention your website, but if folks would love to support you, find your produce, learn more about you, or any other thoughts you'd like to share out with our audience, I'd love to give you that time right now.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we're quite proud of our website. That was something we had a good friend of ours help design. And we aren't growing much during the winter, but we do produce boxes probably about twice a month. And you can check out our website. It's www.nottinghamshirefarms.com. And it's Nottinghamshire, like Sherwood Forest. Nice. It's the county in England that my husband's from. And during the summer, we open our farm store when strawberries start, which is May. And for us, like this last year, we started strawberries, I think it was around May 20th. And our last day of strawberry harvest was September 17th. Incredibly long strawberry season. And we cycle through all our local, all our produce, and we'll usually bring in some of our neighbors. We're really lucky. We have about four other organic guys that grow around us.
Yeah, we are so happy, Amanda, that you are practicing what we are preaching, which is building soil. You guys put in cover crop. You're just being a model of the behavior we'd love to see. And we are so wonderful that you took time to talk to us. We've been speaking with Amanda Stevens, organic farmer, mom, Wonder Woman. And we are just so thankful for what you're doing and all the work you put in.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. I'm your host, Jenny Ammon, natural resource educator for the district. And we really appreciate y'all taking a few minutes to share the light with us. We are grateful for a community of conservation-minded folks who know the importance of partnerships. And if you would like more information, check out the NottinghamshireFarms.com site that Amanda told us about. It is gorgeous. And then also look up MarionSWCD.net for more information on our grants and programs. Join us at any of our first Fridays. We have next one, January 7th. And look out our Plan for Your Land program where you can make conservation plans for your property and small farm. That is open for registration as well. Thank you for listening and shining your light.
Conservation Spotlight, the show you just listened to, has been a regular feature of Willamette Wake Up for almost a year. And program host Jenny Ammon is with Marion Soil, Water, and Conservation District, and she was the producer of the show, but she is moving on. I'd like to have a formal goodbye with you, Jenny, and a formal thank you on the air for all the work that you've done. I'd like you to share with us what it was like for you to produce radio.
Well, I first want to back you up. This didn't feel like work, which makes it a bit of a blessing. So I just want to make sure folks know how much help you were in guiding this forward. The path was laid by OSU Small Farms, Victoria Benning, and you really guided me and helped with so many facets of
radio programming that it made it a lot of fun and not so much work. So thank you.
You bet. And just for our listeners, you mentioned Victoria Binning, and she had a show called The Broad Fork. And apparently that was your model and your inspiration.
Absolutely. Yeah, this program was based around that. She actually gave me a lot of her documents and ideas for speakers that are all relative to conservation, not just with the district, but across our Willamette Valley. And that was really, really important because we can't do our work without really strong partnerships.
Right. And so this gave the Marion Soil, Water, and Conservation District an opportunity to share its good work to a broader audience.
Absolutely. This opened up a new way of doing outreach. I think throughout the changes in the last 2 years, we've really gotten creative and flexible with how we reach folks, whether that's urban or agriculture. And this was something that I think was done in the past to the district, but it wasn't continuous. And I'm hoping that this continues to be a regular spotlight with partnerships. But yeah, it just really helped us get our word out and just discuss larger issues, from the drought this summer to what biocontrols look like for invasive species to meeting some of our new staff. And I just thought it was a wonderful platform for that kind of education.
I'm glad that you found that KMUZ was beneficial to the work that you're doing. And you are moving on. Do you mind sharing with our listeners where you'll be heading off to, Jenny?
You bet. So speaking of flexibility and all these changes, one of the things that I realize is that we have so many great opportunities in this area. The city of Kaiser had an environmental education coordinator position come open, and I put my hat in the ring, and they interviewed and chose me, which I said, awesome, this is great. So I'm going to be heading over there doing very similar job duties and partnering with very similar organizations. So I really hope, Melanie, we get to keep crossing paths. And listeners, I hope you can join in the outreach efforts that I'll be putting on the ground in Kaiser.
Great, Jenny. I certainly hope our paths continue to cross too. I really appreciated your programming. I thought it was very relevant and super local, so it was very accessible. Any last words you might want to share about having a community radio station in our community?
I love it. I listen regularly. My biggest takeaway from this, Melanie, is that without these types of programming, without this type of, and it's giving, I know you gave a lot of time to me to help with, hey, this is the equipment you need. But if folks only knew how many people come together with good intention and, you know, hopes of educating folks beyond just their regular day to day, I think they would either participate a little more or maybe give a little more. But KMUZ opened up a huge door for our agency and me personally to grow and to kind of expand how we do education and outreach. So this community radio does mean a lot. I think if folks aren't listening, they wouldn't be hearing this, but if they have a way to share it with a friend, or, you know, when you're at Thanksgiving or whatever holiday you get together with, make sure you're sharing the KMUZ story, and the programs that you offer are so diverse. I mean, there's something for everybody, which I know is a cheesy cliche thing to say, but really the programming on KMUZ fits niches throughout.
Well, I really appreciate the plug for KMUZ. I'm glad you've been a part, and I'm pretty sure our paths will cross. I've been talking with Jenny Amon. She's the outgoing program host for Conservation Spotlight. And like she said, we're working on trying to keep it going. So fingers crossed. And thank you again, Jenny, and good luck.
Thank you so much.